I don't know how we're ever
works well when it cuts, but when
you I haven't sworn wrong. Midnight
it's well, just good for you.
Good to see you.
We're all set, boy.
So I think we're safe.
They responded. The rules in that contest is it's $15,000.
Well, 14 is in a great shape right now.
Then it's
a bad couple of weeks.
Five or $10,000 for the gear that's closest to
it is.
So you can, you
there's
will
not,
be
I mean, we're just in a spot right now where there's not a lot we can do about it.
Interesting.
Well, it,
yeah, I think it's just Commissioner Roth.
What's that, 199.9?
Oh, I didn't bring my.
No,
my
I don't know who's going to scale that.
All things considered.
That's really close.
And no one believes this mechanism. Governor,
that's all you can
do. I would think so.
Exactly.
Well, if you have a good enough scale at home,
location is the right.
Yeah. I'm sure the deer, that we shot
lane,
lost 10 pounds
two
since
lane.
In
the
you know,
crash
couple of days
history
of
the there was almost identical in terms of fatalities and numbers of crashes.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'll call the meeting of the EQB to order. You should have in front of you the agenda. Welcome, everyone, for taking the time to be here today. Why don't we start with introductions around the table, Brian?
Brian Napstad, Bowser Chair.
Aggie Lighthizer, Assistant Commissioner at the Health Department, standing in for Commissioner Ed Ellinger, who is off doing a speech in Hutchinson today.
Tom Langward, DNR.
I'm Julie Gehring, Citizen Member from Moorhead.
Kristen Weeks Duncanson, Citizen Member from Mapleton, Minnesota.
Bernie Arsenault with MnDOT.
I'm Clint Eastwood. I'm Dave Fredrickson.
I'm Bob Patton, Executive Director.
John Saxhaug, Citizen Member from Minneapolis.
Eric Tomlinson, Citizen Member from St. Paul.
John Stein, Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency. Make my day.
Katie Clark, Commissioner of Deed.
Spencer Cron, Commissioner of the Department of Administration.
Good. Anna, do you want to introduce yourself? And we'll just kind of quickly go around the room.
Thank you. Anna Sherman, Agriculture.
Helen Anderson, Commissioner Fredrickson's office and Governor's office.
Bill Grant, Commerce.
Greta Gauthier, Agriculture.
Randall Looney, Department of Natural Resources.
Jill Townley, DNR.
Jim Urkel, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy.
Kate France, EQB staff.
Craig Offeld, Pollution Control Agency.
Paula Maccabee, Just Change Law Offices and Water Legacy.
Michelle Rozier, Sierra Club.
Pat Tamman, Sudan.
Bob Tamman, Sudan.
Paul Harvest. Kirk Adelka, MPCA.
Amy Zipko with the House of Representatives.
Quinn Cheney, Quinn & Co. Public Affairs.
Linda Brummer, Minnesota Department of Health.
Tony Quillis, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce.
Travis Germanson, Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Susan Heffern, PCA.
Susan Medhow, Commerce.
All right. Well, thank you, and again, welcome to each and every one of you, and particular welcome to Bob and Pat. Good to see your smiling faces back there again. Thank you for being here. At this time, we do have an agenda, and I would ask for a motion to adopt the consent agenda.
So moved.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Is there further discussion on the motion to adopt the agenda? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion carries. Excellent. We've had our introductions. Chair's report, this is the day that we've been waiting for. If somebody asked me how long a year is, I could very clearly say a year is exactly the amount of time it takes for us to respond to a governor's executive order. and so we are just about right on the money, I believe, in terms of that. And I want to acknowledge each and every one of the members of the various agencies that took the time and put in so many long and hard hours putting this. I'm looking at you, Randall Doneen, and others. Yeah, you're so shy.
He's so shy.
Anyway.
You made our day there.
Yeah, right. But if you had anything to do with this, I just wish you'd stand up so we could acknowledge the great work that you've done. I'm looking at you, Randall Doneen, and then others will follow. Well, I thank you so much for the hard work of all of you. No, we didn't have budget for this, and I know that each of the departments put resources, time, and effort, and I just want to, for the record, acknowledge the great work that all of you have done, and including one Bob Patton up here also, Bob. So with that, again, this is the day we've been waiting for. We have resolutions that we should be able to roll through, and I'd ask Bob to make some comments. Bob Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, materials at the table, the boring part first here. You should have a proposed resolution on the report card in front of you, and you should also have a very nice, beautiful, colorful report card in front of you. Also, most of you brought your copies, but I tried to supply others that didn't have it with the big book of environmental review. So if you don't have one, let me know or let Mary know, and she can grab one for you. Mr. Chair, you stole my thunder a little bit because I wanted to express my sincere thanks. It's a little too early to break open the champagne on this, I know, but we are very close to doing something pretty significant here, and there has been a tremendous amount of work by a lot of people that are should go through the roster of all the people involved here at some point. But I do want to acknowledge the core team chairs. You already Randall's probably gotten too much recognition for this thing, too much, but. He deserves quite a bit. Also, Susan Heffron chaired the governance core team. Bill Grant chaired the report card core team, and ably assisted by Matt Langan, who is no longer with the state of Minnesota, but Matt really did a yeoman's work as well. And then on Todd Bewin, who is going to be showing up a little later, core team chair for the Congress, and then of course Ellen Anderson has worked on that a considerable amount, and a special note to Anna Sherman, the Ellen's intern, who continues to do a tremendous amount of work and is doing really fine work. So, but lots of other people unnamed on the core teams. We had a support advisory teams of interagency teams, the subcommittees who also put in a lot of time and work and thought, and then all the citizens that have testified along the way as well have really enriched this process. So thanks to all, and I probably missed somebody really important, but thanks to you as well.
Bob Patton.
I was going to say.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Thank you. I want to note that we have I'm yammering on here, but we have a tight meeting here today. We have three action items to take care of. I'm kind of estimating about 45 minutes apiece for them, and we're going to have opportunities for testimony on all of them, but we're going to have it pretty darn limited. I think no more than 15 minutes per item for testimony. And so, I encourage people who do want to testify to get in their purple cards so we can kind of divide up the time fairly. And board members, just in terms of questions, let's have them clarifying questions rather than asking opinions if we could, because we are going to have to have enough time for deliberation on these items. Next meeting, I believe we will have the December meeting, which is December 19th. a couple things that are likely to be there. We had a legislative mandate for reports on mandatory categories, and we want to be able to report to the board on those. And also, the board had given staff an assignment to pull together agency people to talk about the frac sand, the industrial silica sand issue, and what are the things we know and what are the things we don't know. And we're working on that, and we want to be able to come back and report on that. Last but not least, and I don't see him in the audience, this would have been, if he showed up, Doug Benson's last board meeting. Doug Benson, our tech rep from health, who is, I think he's been tech rep for about 10 years, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
He is retiring, and so congratulations to him, and I wish he was here for his last one, but we wish him well in his future endeavors, and he's really been a quite a contributor, including on the core team for the governance and coordination item. So thank you to Doug. Okay, that's it.
Good.
For me. Thank you.
And we've been joined by Commissioner Mike Rothman.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Good to be here.
We went around the table, so
it's a big day.
Want to acknowledge your presence.
Great.
I thought maybe it was, something I was
wearing.
All right, we're going to then move directly into the discussion and presentation regarding the environmental review improvement. And I'll ask Randall Lanine to come up and make the presentation, and then we'll have time for testimony after, and then certainly plenty of time for board discussion. So, Randall.
Thank you, Chair, Board. I don't have a lengthy presentation prepared for you. I thought that maybe I would spend the time just briefly going over the recommendations, which are sort of the key outcome of this, and talk maybe a little bit how those have changed since the draft report that went out. And I think one of the key changes that you'll see is that we've listed these recommendations in priority order, which was a direction that the board gave back in.
And Randall, that you would be referring to the priorities on page 20 through 23 in the full report?
I don't have the report. It is.
You're just going from memory, right?
Yeah. Well, I excerpted them here so that I would.
For members, if you have the big report, you should find them mm-hmm. beginning on page 20 of the.
That is correct.
167 page report.
Yeah, they do begin on page 20, and go through page 23.
Okay.
And so the first priority recommendation we had was to strengthen the EQB capacity for oversight and assistance in implementation of the environmental review program in general. Pretty roundly supported recommendation as we went through the focus groups. And I think as tech reps and agencies, this is an area where we've really thought environmental review could benefit. I mean, just making sure that you've got someone that is administering those rules, somebody that's tracking how those rules are being implemented, providing guidance, providing training. And we even added oversight into this, which is I just wanted to be clear on what we mean for oversight. We're not proposing any additional authorities that the EQB staff have over the environmental reviews, but oversight for being able to talk with responsible government units about how they're interpreting the rules, ensuring that people are interpreting the rules consistently and correctly, and to really show leadership for implementation of the environmental review program. And even taking a step forward is, if have periodic, audits where you would take a look at how various environmental reviews have been going and what were the issues that came of that and why were those issues and what could be done about that to further provide either guidance, rule revisions, or additional training or procedures, whatever might be needed to address the issues that are identified. And I think that that everyone really appreciated the work of Grant Downing and John Larson over the years, and really wanted to continue that kind of plus, maybe. So that was the first priority, which seemed like we're not going to get anything else done if we can't administer the program as its basics. So it seems like that's the first priority. The second priority that we developed was this: develop a better system of making information available. Again, pretty broad support generally on this recommendation. It's really trying to move the environmental review program into the 21st century, making sure that documents are available electronically on the web the moment the comment period begins, rather than having to wait for it for mail, expand that time, and even enhancing kind of how that information could be used by EQB staff. And this kind of, there's a tie between priority one and priority two. If we could develop a database that would track what mandatory categories were tripped, how long did it take between the initial EAW and the record of decision on whether an EIS needed. You know, that sort of information could go a long ways for our five-year review of the mandatory categories, so we'd actually have data to assess, okay, which mandatory categories are having the troubles, which ones are getting tripped up and really shouldn't be, and which ones, you know, are still viable. And so doing that, and then, you know, the recommendation is, like, this is probably need to be a phased in thing, because you can build these databases or online portals, and I think we'd want to start out modest, and then as we could develop further into maybe online guidance for EAW preparation and EIS preparation, have documents that other RGUs could use so that they would know how it had been done in the past. You know, is there, can we save some time by seeing by how many else has done it, have examples that proposers could use, get an idea of issues that came up on different projects, and what a great way to start look at cumulative effect issues when we've got all the documents there too. So that was the second priority. The third priority, And this one was interesting. This is, you know, expand the use of the AUAR, which is the Alternative Urban Area Review, or AUAR-like. And I say that because, you know, there is the alternative review process already allowed in the rules, which the Alternative Area Urban Area came out of, and maybe we could consider other types of alternative reviews that would do similar to what the AUR does. It moves that environmental review just upstream a little bit closer to planning, and essentially, to the degree you have a set geographic area and you're reasonably certain there's going to be a fair amount of projects that will be tripping EAWs or EISs in this geographic area, can we put an environmental review document that satisfactorily addresses the issues, identifies them, proposes mitigation plans, so that when a project comes in with the certain parameters that we've already planned for, can just be satisfied with an environmental review through that alternate process rather than having to do it individually. And the local government units that have used the AUA process have been relatively satisfied with that as the process. And so that one came up pretty good in priority. The fourth priority is a little bit of a change from what you saw in the draft document. The draft recommendations, we had two separate recommendations. One was develop an EAW checklist that RGUs could use in lieu of a regular EAW for simpler projects. And the other recommendation we had was early coordination. You know, sort of a mixed review on both of those recommendations. And obviously, I think that there needs to be some thought on to, you know, how would that actually play out as far as providing information and would the information be useful, and as well as the timing that it would take. So what we ended up doing when we looked at the comments we got is, like, well, let's drop it down in priority, and let's look at, rather than having a different EAW, develop a screening tool that RGUs can use to help assess how much time they need to spend on any specific issue in the EAW. And our thought was, and we could even combine that with a early coordination to identify to stakeholders or the public in the area or agencies that these are the issues that the RGU thinks at least are gonna warrant a fair amount of assessment in the EAW to kind of check on that before you deploy the resources to collect the information and complete the EAW. Like I say, this is a lower in priority, and I think it would really, you know, for us to implement this, I think that, you know, we're already working on a revised EAW form and a guidance associated with that and screening level analysis for each of those questions. And so I think we might build off that, and maybe it would be something we'd really need to work with local government units to see how they would see, and other RGUs for that matter, to see how they could see this screening tool working and how would it make most sense to have that early coordination for people to make it useful for both the proposers and for the RGUs and the public. The fifth priority dropped down a little bit. This got pulled out of the first priority, option, which is strengthen EQB capacity, and dropped all the way to fifth, which was to develop an easier process for RGU designation. Currently, you know, if only one government unit is identified as the RGU, if they want to transfer to somebody else, they got to come before the board. The board has to approve it. In most cases, you know, those are kind of, you know, it only gets transferred if both the government units agree that we should be transferring it. Not always, but in most cases. And so we thought maybe we could be a little more efficient with that to not have to go to the board. But to do that, we need to develop better guidance, maybe even the rules on what would be a sufficient case for transferring the RGU. Because the way it reads now, if you've got better expertise at analyzing the effects, it can be transferred. And with that, the DNR and the PCA will be doing almost all the EAW. So we wouldn't want that. And so I think there would be need to be some work to figure out what that criteria would be. The sixth priority and the last priority was to revise the EAW to consider broad issues or effects. And this was the dark horse coming into the draft report, and it got mixed reviews out of the draft report as well. And so we dropped it to our last priority, and it's a difficult one. It has bubbled up in almost every environmental review improvement effort that has gone before me, this idea of alternatives and socioeconomic effects. And, you know, we should figure out how EAWs can address those. And so our thought is, you know, with not a lot of concurrence around this moving forward, let's drop it to the bottom. There may be some of those issues that we can work with, you know, with priority one. If they're legitimate issues with a project, legitimate environmental issues with a project, then maybe we can handle some of those right there. But, you know, it seems difficult to me that we would propose changes in MEPA that would say we're going to look at alternatives as part of EAWs or socioeconomic effects, because those are the two current topics that EAWs do not look at. And we just weren't able at this time to have the information that would warrant us saying, yeah, that's going to be a worthwhile increase in investment to adding those issues to the EAW. So it's not that they're out, but I just think it's going to be a lower priority, and it would take a lot more work to get that information on how that would be best to move forward. And then the last isn't really a recommendation. It was just talking about EQB staff resources that would be needed in order to implement the recommendations. And I just – what I wanted to do here, I just wanted to point out that the previous – you know, the EQB before it was transferred to MPCA had two staff that were fully dedicated to the environmental review staff. And they also had two staff – additional staff that were dedicated to the coordination and strategic planning portions of EQB. Well, three of those staff retired, and then DNR stole the fourth one. And then two staff were hired back, and those two staff are being asked to do environmental review and the strategic planning. I don't see us being able to complete priority number one unless we have two dedicated staff in the environmental review program administration. And then ideally, at least to have priority one implemented in a timely fashion. Certainly we could get to it, but it would just take a lot longer with less resources. And then, of course, the information system, I think, would have a one-time higher cost and then an ongoing cost. And ideally, if we're going to be getting into the database management and the auditing functions and sort of the continual improvement, I think at least another FTE may be needed to manage that database and complete those audits, because those are additional tasks that have not been completed by environment review staff in the past. And I think that's hopefully sums up in a nutshell. I do want to thank everybody that was involved in the process, all the folks that came to the focus groups, that have come to the EQB meetings, to the commissioners, yourselves, and the agency staff that have helped support it, and really, really specifically to EQB staff, Kate Franz and Jeff Smizer. They came on at a critical point. I had lost my sanity in the focus groups, and we were at the point of time where we needed to start evaluating all the recommendations, and it was really super, super helpful to have EQB staff that were able to help. With that, I'll stand for any questions.
I think we were planning to go straight to public testimony and then hold the questions until after public testimony. Thanks, Randall. And I will also point out that Jeff is out ill today, and is, as Ellen said, he's heart sick because he can't be here. So just for your information. Thanks, Randall. Is there public testimony, a public comment on Randall's report? If there is, please come forward and identify yourself. And seeing none, back at it again, Randall. And if you have, if something pops in along the way, please, raise your hand, those that are here. Discussion. Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, two questions for Randall. First one is, when you look at priorities 3 and 4, without a great deal of knowledge, it looks to me like priority 4 might give us more product for less investment. It looks to me like priority 3 would be a huge capital investment or time investment, I should say. So I don't know if that's true or not, but maybe it's not significant enough to bother tinkering around, but it seems to me with limited resources, doing those things that are least expensive, what the best outcome would be, the direction we want to go. And maybe it's just a comment, Randall. I don't know if you have thoughts on what investment would be needed.
That's a fair comment. I actually see them both as a pretty good investment of resources that it would take, and both of them would take working with the RGUs throughout the state to kind of to fine-tune what the product would be. So I actually see them as pretty similar in that sense. The third priority just had larger agreement in the focus groups. I think there was just it, my sense was, and I don't have the hard data to do it, but my sense was that the AUA process was more routinely, not that it wasn't without flaws, certainly there was, and we heard all about the flaws that they had, but I thought there was a broader sense of support for that. But to your point a little better, we're already going to be working on screening level analysis for EAWs to help RGUs and proposers know what they're going to be doing. And I think, continually trying to work on how we can do better about early coordinating with other agencies and the public is an ongoing thing. So, to the degree we might be working on this stuff as part of our first priority, And then it's really the official, do we don't want rule revisions, do we want specific procedures in place for when these tools would be used, would be dropped to the lower priority. And so I could see that there is maybe portions of this that, yeah, we could probably get on sooner rather than later, maybe ahead of the third priority.
And maybe that's it. Maybe it's sequencing more than staging as much as anything. But
yeah.
And my second question, Randall, is you did this a little bit on the last page, but identifying the resources needed for each of the priorities. You did that, it looks like, for priorities 1 and 2 and maybe a little into 3. Is it conceivable to do that for each of these so that we know with a given set of resources what it is we might tackle?
Well, I actually... You know, it's all about, you know, the time that it would take to get it done. I think if we had 2, you know, actually the 3 dedicated staff, if we were doing priority 2, I think that we could get to all of these priorities. And I see that as because, you know, these issues, the 5th and the 6th priority and the 4th, you know, all or the 3rd, all of those would be work items that would be right in the wheelhouse of the environmental review staff and EQB, and it would just be a matter of when they're able to work those in after they got the 1st and 2nd priorities done. Now, certainly, if we put more staffs, we could get it done quicker. That wasn't really the way I envisioned this, because I think it would be best to kind of move along, kind of sequencing these steps a little bit, and that's why I didn't tie the additional resources to priorities, because I assume that those staff will move. Okay, we got the 1st priority, we got the 2nd priority. All right, let's move on to the 3rd. Let's move on to the 4th. Was my thinking on that? You know, I don't know that I could really give an FTE for each of those. Obviously, the 5th priority isn't going to take a lot of work, but it would take a rule revision, and so, you know, that's probably not a full FTE. Both the 3rd and 4th priorities and the 6th are going to take a fair amount of work to get done, you know. And so, if you wanted to tackle those right away, you know, you'd need at least another FTE. You know,
Mr. Chairman, I guess maybe to cut to the chase, maybe the next step, assuming concurrence by the governor, if we developed a sort of a timeline, a list of needed resources or an implementation plan, whatever you want to call it, might be the next step. And then to make sure it stays on our radar, to sort of do an annual review and evaluation of where we are, might be the way to put some life into this.
Commissioner Stein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Randall, on the 4th priority item, too, on the screening tool. It changed after the input, so I'm trying to understand how, if this does have the potential of delaying reviews or if it's simply clarifying reviews. I'm trying to understand if this enhances projects that are already required to go through environmental review, or if it's something that applies to things that may or may not be required to go through environmental review.
Thank you. Yeah, it was intended only for those projects where it's already been determined that you need to prepare an environmental assessment worksheet. And the original recommendation that we changed was sort of an acknowledgement that EAWs have really kind of grown since they were originally envisioned back when MEPA, from the screening tool that, well, we don't want an EIS, so we better make sure that we cover everything in the EAWs. And that has sometimes been counterproductive to proposers and RGUs. And so what it was an acknowledgement that we're never going to get the camel out of the tent on that one. So let's say, can we develop another EAW for projects that, you know, there might be some issues, but they're pretty limited, you know, so can we hone in on just those issues? Of course, the idea of developing a different form and with different information, it didn't get solid, you know, yeah, let's go forward with that recommendation. So we altered it to be a tool that RGUs could use. So they could, maybe we could get the camel out of the tent a little bit if they apply a screening level analysis to the project once they've got the project description, that they could decide, okay, based on, you know, these screening questions that EQB has developed and worked, it looks like, you know, water quality and land use are the big ones that we better spend some time making sure we get in. We don't need to worry too much about air quality or you know, scenic resources. Just something to give proposers and RGUs sort of a scale on where they need to spend the time. Because a lot of times you give somebody the 31-question form and they feel like they got to put down something on every one of those things, and we would like to kind of free people up to focus on what you need to, don't focus on what you need to. And then our thought was, well, combining, because RGUs can make mistakes on what they think are important issues. I've done a couple EAWs where I get comments says, wow, we totally didn't think about that. And so really to have sort of agency or early coordination on that screening tool to kind of give the RGU and the proposer some sort of yeah, we were on the right track, or no, boy, it looks like scenic issues is an important one. We better take a look at what we heard and try to address that best we can. So I don't see it as catching any additional projects. I do see it as an additional step that an RGU could select to do. So what would that time mean? And so conceivably, that would be good. Spent time, and you could decide, oh yeah, we're right, we don't need to focus on these. But it also could, you know, depending on the input you get, or if the project description is a little fuzzy and you get you know, that's been my experience, if people are confused, then you get blown out of the water with questions. And so I think there could be some variability on how well that would be implemented, and that was my concept. I really wanted to make sure that we work with RGUs on how this tool would be most beneficial to them and project proposers.
Commissioner Stein.
Mr. Chair, thank you. That answers my question. What I'm concerned about is that while an RGU and a project proponent might agree on the scope and scale of issues that are relevant, I don't know that it would, on a voluntary basis, be sufficient to withstand any legal challenges that might come forward. And so I'm curious whether or not it might be something we'd pilot, for example, and then take to a rulemaking process so that it would be more defensible and its value have a little bit greater clarity. What I'm concerned about is that there is an extra step in there, so there's additional potential for additional time. And I understand completely what you're saying about, you know, the mini EIS that EAWs have become, wanting to some mechanism to scope those more effectively early. I don't know, though, that we can voluntarily accomplish that, given that people can object and raise concerns throughout the process. So I'm a little uncomfortable with that idea as sort of a we'll do it and see if it works. I think it would be, If we were making it more of a pilot-based effort, I could see that being something that would maybe stand on its own. So that's my concern.
Commissioner Stein, Chair, I concur with that. I mean, that was kind of along my thinking of it, is that this is something that we're going to have to develop and see if it works. And if it works and we see kind of where the flaws are and where we would need to have some rule sideboards put in, then we can kind of work out what those are. So that is very, very close to my concept. If it didn't quite come out that way, then we can think about how to make that clarification.
Okay. That was just visiting with Bob in terms of process. This is an opportunity for you to do edits as we move through this, and I would assume that we would want to do that from the perspective that Commissioner Stein would move and someone would second.
Is that appropriate this time, Mr. Chair? If I have just one word adjustment to the fourth priority item.
I think it is, yeah.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd move that we insert the word a pilot between A and screening in in the fourth priority item.
Okay. Develop a pilot screening tool for EAW development and early coordination process. That's correct. The sentence should
yes,
be there.
That's my motion, Mr. Chair.
Is there a second to Commissioner Stein's motion?
Second.
There is a second. Is there further discussion? John?
Nope. That would address my concern, is that we don't make it sound as though we're doing it everywhere all the time for every category.
Sure.
Just try it to see. That's what a pilot means to me.
Okay. Pardon me? We can do a voice vote. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Randall? Nope. I'm sorry. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the adjustment of adding the word pilot, I would tend to agree with Commissioner Landwehr's comment that I see that as a higher priority at this point in time. I think there is going to be more bang for the buck if we have that tool in place. I'm looking at this from a LGU's perspective, and as I look at the third priority, it appears to be a priority that is more in tune with larger urban areas that have comprehensive plans, that have land use plans, and the numbers of those larger urban areas is much smaller than the EAWs that happen throughout the rest of the state. And it just appears that this is a tool, the fourth priority at this point in time, appears to be a tool that would be able to be effectively be used across the state at the get-go, whereas priority number three would be available to much more selected urban areas. So that would be one comment, and then I have a question about the EQB staff resources. Unless you want to discuss the first comment.
Chairman Napstad and Chair, I just wanted to just clarify that the alternative environmental review process, that's why I call it AUR-like. I've been trying to break away from the AUAR-like, which is limited to the urban area, that the alternative environmental review can be applied anywhere in the state where you think you've got a geographic area and you're reasonably certain what kind of projects might be coming. But you were correct in that the applicability is going to be more limited because it will be only in those specific areas. But ideally, it would be applicable around the state wherever those circumstances are, not necessarily urban development areas. So just I wanted to clarify that point.
And Mr. Chair, I don't want to fall into the trap that tends to think we can't go to the fourth priority until we get the third one done. As was pointed out, we can get the fifth priority done relatively quickly and easily, and we may have that done before we get to the others. The other one, with regard to EQB staff resources, you've kind of painted a before and after picture. You've got how it was before it was being prior to transfer to the MPCA. You've got our current resources listed in the second bullet. In the third bullet, you discuss the investment for the one-time cost for the information systems. But the fourth bullet, I would like a little bit more clarification on, because in that bullet, you're talking about a minimum of two FTEs should be dedicated solely to the administration, and I'm not clear. I'm not clear that language conveys that those are the same two people referred to in the second bullet. So maybe the insertion of the two existing FTEs should be dedicated solely to a portion of their current duties, which would in effect leave the other portion of their duties open at this point in time.
Mr. Chair.
Bob?
Mr. Chair, if I might, the bullet on current staff resources, two FTEs, right now the way they're tasked is to do both environmental review and everything else. And the everything else, especially with this executive order, has been a whole lot. And so really it amounts to one FTE or less, varying at times, to environmental review. So I think the recommendation here, as I understand it, is to beef up the base base staffing for environmental review solely to two FTEs. That would be in addition, and any staffing for other functions of the board would be in addition to that. And then plus on the, I understand the last bullet to say also, or let's see, is it, is that last bullet? Yeah, the last bullet in terms of the kind of additional duties that we're, you know, the that we're also tasking environmental review staff to do, we might need yet another FTE. So we're really talking 2 to 3 FTEs devoted solely to environmental review duties, not mixed in with the other duties of the EQB staff. So did I hope I totally confused you on that one.
Well, I think your I think your explanation clarified it, but I'm not sure that's reflected in the language.
Okay.
That's, that would be my concern, that we're not clearly articulating what it is we're saying. Because I'm, frankly, I'm mixing up the two FTEs that are mentioned in bullet two with the two that are in four. And we've been studying this a little longer than most, so I'm concerned that somebody gets this, you know, the executive summary in another agency or in the governor's office, and that lack of clarity exists.
Well, my thoughts, Commissioner Napstead, was that, you know, it is a foregone conclusion based on the executive order that we don't have adequate staff. Whereas the EQB does not have sufficient dedicated staff resources to undertake these vital planning and policy coordination functions. And so I thought as we were moving through this, we were less and less inclined to be so prescriptive that we end up with we need 4.5 FTE. You might need 3.5, you might need 4.5, you might need 2, and I don't know. And so I'm trying to figure out a way where we could get away from the prescriptive aspect of the resolution, and I this one here apparently went further down that road than I had anticipated. Shame on you. Randall?
In my defense, I did get direction when the draft report to identify that how many resources and what we could get out of them.
Of course you did.
But I think you know, if there's some language that can provide the clarification that Chairman Napstead is recommending, I think that would be not a problem. I mean, really, I was just trying to communicate, you know, the way it is now, where we had two FTEs that were dedicated to everything the EQB does, environmental review and the coordination, isn't going to get any of our priorities done very quickly. And if we want to make any headway on priority number one, we should at least get back to the old model of having two dedicated FTEs to environmental review. And if we really want to move forward with the second priority, I think we'll need additional. So I'm open to any language to make that clear. And I suppose what's probably the most confusing about it is the way I just kind of did it in this bullet item fashion and not breaking out that this really, the fourth and the fifth are, this is what I think we need to get this done. Regardless, you know, if EQB didn't have any resources at all, if we didn't have any staff at all, I was asked, what do you think we need? Well, I think we need at least two FTE to get priority one. And if we're gonna go into priority two, then I think we need three.
All right.
And so maybe we can just break those two bullets apart, or if there's some way to provide that clarity, I'd be more than willing to entertain.
Well, I think if we could deal with it from the perspective of a range, maybe, of FTEs, and just to keep with that non-prescriptive approach. Brian, do you have an idea for an edit? I know John has some thoughts also, but I'll yield to Commissioner Napstead.
Well, I spoke to Randall about this a little bit ahead of the meeting, and the edit that could potentially explain it more clearly is on the third bullet. When we discuss the two FTEs, we could say at a minimum the existing two FTEs should be focused solely on, you know, administration of the environmental review program. That clarifies that we're talking about the existing staff and not two new staff. I agree with your comment that we shouldn't be that prescriptive, because that's probably not going to do it anyway. That's only going to do half the rededicating and refocusing those two only gets half the job done anyway. And the reason I agree with your not being so prescriptive, because it conveys the illusion to somebody that with this number of people, we can get the job done. And I don't think we're at that point yet.
Let the record reflect that Brian Napstead actually agreed with me.
Mr. Chair.
John Linkstein.
Thank you. I think the other part of this that is confusing is the first bullet. It just kind of could, if we did away with the first bullet, in addition to what Commissioner Napstead just said, I think it would help, because then we're just talking about the future. We're not talking about the past. And I'm not sure that the first bullet is necessary.
Edits?
I would agree. I don't think pointing out, we could go back as far in history as we wanted to,
right,
and it doesn't really add anything to what we're suggesting for the future. So if we did eliminate that bullet, it removes the time sequence that this information conveyed to me. And then if we add in the word, at a minimum, add the word existing in between two FTEs, and FTEs would add the clarity I was looking for. And I would make that a motion.
All right. You've heard the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Is there discussion? Randall, in your defense of bullet one?
No, I'm chair commissioner. I'm fine with Ruben. I was just trying to. There had been a lot of discussion about EQB staff and kind of what the resources were before the energy siting got moved out of it, and so I just, for me,
history.
I was trying to just provide some clarification on that front. But yeah, if it was more confusing than helpful, I'm fine with getting rid of it.
So the motion is to strike bullet one, or the first bullet, beginning with the word prior and ending with the recommendation, and add after in the second bullet, now becoming the first bullet, after the word two. Your addition is?
He's on the third bullet, Mr. Chair.
Are we in the third bullet?
Yeah, we would be on the new third bullet, and it would be the second sentence at a minimum.
Oh, okay, all right, I'm sorry, yeah. Existing, at a minimum, to existing.
Right. I guess we would add the words the, and then the word to would stay, and then existing. And then we move on to FTEs.
Okay.
Got it.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Bob?
Apologize. I just wanted to raise my own concern about the edit that was is proposed. Is that currently? I mean, really the hiring of staff was based on a set of skills that both lent themselves to the environmental review program and strategic planning. And I'm very concerned about any language that would suggest that we devote those particular staff that we have today to solely environmental review. And it takes away a lot of the discretion, frankly, to the leadership of the organization. And so I don't know if the language is really saying that or not, but I just express that as a concern. When you say the existing staff, I'm concerned about that.
At a minimum, the two existing FTEs should be dedicated solely to administration of the environmental review
right.
program with appropriate administrative support and leadership from the ED. I guess that kind of reads that way, doesn't it?
That's the way I read it, sir.
I agree with the point.
Chair.
Please, Eric.
I propose striking the second bullet entirely as well. We're talking about the existing staff, but does that matter? What we need to get it done is two full-time employees focused solely on environmental review. That way it takes out that potential confusion about reassigning skill sets, because obviously it's going to take certain skill sets.
We have a motion on the table, and it is the Napstead motion
right.
to add the word "the" and "existing." Is there further discussion on that motion?
Well, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, did I hear you correct that you were considering withdrawing that, or
well,
friendly amendment?
You spoke to
Bob's
Mr. Patton's concern.
Bob's clarification of the impact that language could have on the existing staff and flexibility sheds new light onto the edit that I had suggested. And his comment would suggest that I would rescind the motion.
Which you do?
Which I will.
All right. The motion has, let's see, will the seconder agree?
Yes.
The seconder does agree. We're back to a comment made by Eric. Choose to act on that comment?
I guess, can I make a motion to strike?
You can do anything you want.
Mr. Chair.
Be careful.
Just to clarify, do we want the vote on the first motion there, or to delete the
question was still on the first bullet, Mr. Chair.
Question still on the first
bullet. Oh, to remove right, the first bullet. Right. That's right. Okay, I'm sorry. You are correct.
So Mr. Napstead's motion, as I understand it, Mr. Chair, was that it included the strike of the first bullet.
Yes.
But we only removed the portion of the motion that was the edit to the now.
Well, the motion was for bullet one and bullet three. Right. And rescinding the motion means it's back in, right. Everything's back on the table.
Then we can take it from the beginning.
So if you choose to move.
I'll move, Mr. Chair.
Sure. There's I'll a move motion to remove bullet one, the historical reference.
That's my motion.
There's a second, I assume.
I will second that.
There is a second. Is there further discussion on the motion to remove bullet one? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion carries. Bullet one is gone. All right, further discussion on the priorities, the recommended priorities. Hearing none, is there public comment? Ms. McAbee? If not, we should then move to our... unless there are other questions for Randall, we should be able to move to the resolution, which you should have in your packet.
I think there's still an amendment.
Oh, have another one? Okay, we're back to your comment. Okay, Eric?
My comment about removing bullet number two as well.
And you're moving?
I move to remove the second bullet as well. From EQB staff resources.
That is the current EQB staff resources, that bullet, the second existing bullet here.
Second existing bullet.
Okay, and so you're moving to remove the portion beginning with the current EQB staff resources and ending with lower priority recommendations, the second bullet.
Correct.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Is there a second to the motion? You want to speak to your motion, Eric?
Was there a second, though?
Was there a second?
I'll second it.
There is a second. Eric?
I guess to restate what I said earlier, I think by removing the second bullet, we'll remove any kind of misinterpretation of existing staff and staff qualifications and reassignment of those staff.
Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Bullet number two is edited out. Other comments on
Chair.
Randall?
With that last change, I would merely recommend that the order of the bullets change so that the now first bullet would become the second bullet. To have a nice orderly an orderly fashion because it wasn't good in the first place, but I think the first bullet should be the speed at which recommendations can be implemented will depend on the availability, and the second one will be the substantial one-time cost, and the third is if we're going to do that we need a third FTE.
Okay, is there a motion to reorder the bullets?
Yep.
All right, there is a motion. Is there a second? There's a second. Is there discussion? Hearing done, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Same sign, the motion carries. So the bullets are reordered. All right, other questions or comments regarding the resolution of the Environmental Quality Board? We'll be taking that up. That's in your packet. The resolution for the environmental review and improvement is mandated by the Executive Order 1132. Have you all had an opportunity to read the resolution? Commissioner Landwehr?
Mr. Chairman, I have, and I'd be willing to move that. I'd make one suggestion. The two therefores say that we approve the recommendation and that we forward it to the governor. It doesn't say anything beyond that, and I guess I think it would be useful to include in there that if the governor approves this, we implement it, or we develop a plan of implementation or something to that effect.
So, again, you would like to add a new therefore?
Let me do this in appropriate sequence, Mr. Chair. I would move the resolution.
Okay, you've heard the motion to move the resolution. Is there a second to the motion to move the resolution?
Second.
There is. Is there a discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would do an amendment to the propose a friendly amendment to the motion. That would be to include a second. Now, therefore, be it resolved that upon concurrence of the governor, the EQB will develop an implementation plan, including timeline and needed resources to implement each item, and progress to be reviewed and evaluated annually by EQB.
Do you have it all, Bob?
I'm working on it.
I can give you this copy if
you've got it written down.
More or less.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll second.
There is a second to the motion to amend the resolution. In other words, the long and short is you.
If the governor
an action item, yeah.
Assuming the governor will say yes to this, but then we ought to do something with it.
Okay. Questions or comments on the motion to amend? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion to amend the resolution, say aye. Whoop.
No, go ahead.
Aye, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. And now on the resolution itself, it should be a roll call, so I'll ask Mr. Patton to call the roll.
Commissioner Clark.
Aye.
Commissioner Kronk.
Aye.
Ms. Duncanson.
Aye.
Commissioner Fredrickson?
Aye.
Ms. Gehring?
Aye.
Commissioner Landwehr?
Aye.
Commissioner Knapstad?
Aye.
Commissioner Rothman?
Aye.
Mr. Saxog?
Aye.
Commissioner Arsenault?
Aye.
Commissioner Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Tomlinson?
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Well, it's unanimous at 12.
All right, the motion prevails. The resolution is adopted and shall be forwarded to the governor. Congratulations, Randall. It's a good piece of work, and staff. All right, we will go then to the Executive Order 1132, again, the adoption of the Environmental Governance and Coordination Recommendation, and our presenter will be Mr. Bob Patton. And we'll try to do about 10 minutes of presentation, about 15 of testimony if there is, and if not, we can move directly to board deliberation. Welcome, Mr. Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. You have before you a resolution on environmental governance and coordination, and this, of course, is a resolution that contains recommendations developed out of the analysis of alternatives on governance and coordination that you wasn't part of your packet but was part of a previous packet and was the subject of our October 30th meeting. That's the September 19th draft. We took a little different approach, first of all, than the Environmental Review Project in that you will not, if you approve this resolution, be adopting this report at all. This report is just background. What the resolution is self-contained, and so you, by adopting the resolution, you'll be adopting recommendations contained within the resolution.
I'll walk through this very briefly. I know you've all had a chance to review this, and hopefully it's very consistent with the discussion that you that we had at the October 30th meeting. Starting on the first page with the whereas statements, these are really mostly just factual findings of fact type statements. And so I won't go through those in any detail, but let me know if there's anything you see that's troublesome. Going on to page two, these are conclusions of the board. So going through these, the first one's really speaking to the laws. The original drafters recognized that there were these problems that went beyond the boundaries of state agencies, and the second bullet builds off of that by saying that the governor and the executive branch need a mechanism to do the type of analysis envisioned by the original drafters. The third bullet talks about how the EQB is a unique forum in state government where citizens can come to a board such as yourself that's populated with nine agency commissioners and five citizen members to exchange information. And the fourth one illustrates the benefit of that to state policymaking and environmental quality. The fifth one states that the staff support's inadequate to fulfill the mission and critical responsibilities. The sixth conclusion is that there are specific changes to the PCA Citizens Board process and environmental review process to improve the current system. And so the sixth conclusion really refers to the charge that was given to the board from the legislature pertaining to the PCA Citizens Board. As you'll recall, we have recommendations that pertain solely to the Environmental Quality Board, and then we have some recommendations that pertain to the PCA Citizens Board. Then we get into the now be it resolved, and we have the recommendations themselves, which are 1 through 4. Number one, simply that the board should continue to exist, but should be revitalized and refocused. The third one really breaks down the functions to three critical functions that can only be performed by a board such as this: strategic planning and interagency coordination, environmental review, oversight and improvement, and public access to environmental review information. So the first one is attempting to detail what we heard in terms of what is really strategic planning and interagency coordination. What are the elements of that? And so it tries to lay that out in terms of identification of those types of issues that are suited to this board that transcend the traditional boundaries of agencies, to analyze those issues. It brings in the idea of indicators, which is reflective of the report card, developing strategies, and there is some phrasing in there that attempts to bring in some of the concepts that were discussed at the October 30th meeting and some of the subcommittee meeting in terms of not only the planning issues, but some of the fairness, the efficiency and fairness issues of permitting. And so we tried to bring that into this strategic planning function in that's Roman numeral 3 under A. And then meaningfully engaging the public. B is the environmental review oversight and continuous improvement. And, you know, I should note that there is overlap or, you know, I hopefully can, you know, strong consistency between what's stated here for environmental review functions and what you just discussed with the environmental review recommendations themselves. And this is just simply trying to capture this in the governance question. So the first one is creating mechanisms to monitor issues related to environmental review and to keep the rules up to date and tailored to deal with those issues. And the second Roman numeral two is continuing to do really those base functions that were described so well by Randall and the report that on environmental review, program support and guidance to the public and to RGUs and project proposers. Then finally, the last function that's outlined, really breaking this out, it's part of the environmental review function, but this idea of a public portal. And again, this is the same concept that that's contained in the environmental review report and the recommendations you just approved. And so I hope you find that entirely consistent. Third is addressing the staff resources. Now, this is a difference between approach here as well. That in this recommendation, we did not directly address the numbers of FTEs or dollar amounts, but tried to describe the need. And so it starts off by saying that we need to have a sufficient number of staff members to support the activities, and restates that the current level of staffing is inadequate to perform those functions. Second, number B is that the really emphasizing the role of member agencies here, which again has been a traditional role through the years of the EQB that that agencies have contributed staff resources to EQB-sponsored efforts. This executive order being a primary example. It also, I should highlight, brings up the opportunities for even mobility assignments or other types of staffing arrangements that would meet the staffing needs. So it's meant to be written in an open way. Number C, in addition to professional staff, strong and consistent leadership is needed. So it's stating the need for a full-time executive director and clerical support. The fourth is talking about the public portal, which will require both development costs and ongoing IT costs over time. And then E, that work plans need to have measurable indicators. And this is something that came up in subcommittee and was added after subcommittee review. Number four really gets to, you may remember the October 30th discussion. There was a lot of discussion over the actual statutory functions of the board and what should be kept, what should be dropped, how are we really refocusing the board. Those types of questions. And again, this is trying to deal with this in a general and open way, leaving the details for later, that the board needs to be able to adapt to the future, and to that end, it really should be examining on a continuous basis those statutory authorities and statutory membership. There have been suggestions, starting with the Citizens Committee report, that there should be some changes in membership, possibly including the Metropolitan Council has been an idea. So again, it's leaving the specifics open, but recognizing that's something we want to do with an eye towards streamlining, consolidating, refocusing, or reaffirming its authorities and membership to align with the priorities. And so then we have the other, be it further resolved, has to do with the PCA mandate that this project has had. And that those recommendations. And if you need more details on this, we might want to call up Susan Heffron, who was instrumental in writing these. The first one is that no major changes should be made to the role of the PCA Commissioner and the PCA Citizens Board in bringing permits and environmental review documents to the Citizens Board for decision. And the second one is that the MPCA should evaluate and recommend specific changes to the board's process and the environmental review process, including automatic triggers that bring projects before the board, timeliness for submittal of materials to the board for inclusion into the record, and three, review of mandatory category thresholds and environmental review program improvements currently underway. I would be happy to stand for questions.
Questions for Mr. Patton?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Patton, I guess with respect to bullet number three, item number three, we talk about the additional resources that are needed. Since this will be a recommendation of the governor, Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm asking for board direction here. Should we propose a budget number for the 14-15 budget? Because obviously, it's not been incorporated in any of our budgets yet, and if we want the governor to take some action on this, we better put a number out there.
Mr. Chair, in responding to Commissioner Lambert, what I thought we might do is a similar recommendation or a similar conclusionary there, now, therefore, that you included in the last resolution. We may need to do the same thing here, that upon concurrence of the governor, that we bring forward an implementation plan, including the necessary resources to implement the recommendations. So rather than get a specific number in the resolution, I think the conversation that the chair and a few of us had offline was perhaps we should put forward an implementation recommendation to the governor following his concurrence.
Further discussion? Hearing none, are you ready to, Mike, you had a comment?
Did you want to move that? Yeah, condition?
Well, we haven't asked for public testimony, Mr. Chair, so I have a number of minor edits that I'll take up.
Okay, yeah. All right. Further questions for Bob? Seeing none, thank you, Bob. And at this time, maybe you can just kind of hang loose, and we'll ask for public testimony at this time. Ms. McAbee? Welcome.
Good afternoon. Paula McAbee, and I'm a lawyer with Just Change Law Offices, and some of my work recently has been with Water Legacy. I can really appreciate the amount of work that went into this. The only thing that seems new to me in looking at this proposal is the second bullet point having to do with a pollution control agency that's on page 5. And it suggests that the PCA should evaluate and recommend specific changes. One of the things that the focus group on conservation talked about is evaluating not just the mandatory category thresholds, but the exemptions as well. There were a number of people who are not represented today, particular people who worked in the rural area in Minnesota, who felt that the current exemptions might be getting in the way of people finding out information about projects. So I would just, when I wrote up sort of the views, all the people I'd heard in that improvement process in our June 26 memo, I put in as a recommendation for the process was to eliminate all categorical exemptions so that if a project is considered on its own merits and if it has the potential for significant environmental effects, it not just be exempted out because that particular industry one year had a very effective campaign at the legislature. So what I would just ask is that if we're going to be reviewing mandatory category thresholds analytically, that we also look at exemptions. Maybe some of them are no longer appropriate or they're too broad. And so that on page 5, number 2, that if there's going to be a review of how it's working now, we look at mandatory thresholds, we look at exemptions, and maybe there needs to be some adjustments on either or both of those together. So that would be my one suggestion. And I think that hadn't been in prior drafts, so I didn't raise it before.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Stein, do you have any thoughts?
Well, Well, I think the reference in that Ms. McAbee is referring to pertains to the review of environmental review categorical thresholds for reviews that is currently underway. So I'm not sure if this would actually broaden that. And so I'm not sure, Mr. Patton, which staff are, what that review of existing mandatory, there's a report coming in December.
Right.
And is it looking at exemptions or not? Because this isn't intended to broaden or lessen the scope of that review, but if I hear what Ms. McAbee is asking for, so my question is that included or not? Because our intention was not to broaden or modify the scope of that existing report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Stein. And this is where I wish Jeff was here, because he's been working on the mandatory category project. But my understanding is that it only includes mandatory categories and does not include exemptions. So that would, it sounds as though that would expand the project, and that is, as you point out, that is a December due date. So,
thank you.
So perhaps then that's an item not for this December due date, but I think it's an item that we at least would be requesting out of coming out of that environmental improvement process, that it be put on the work plan maybe for the next year, is to take a look at that other side of the coin. I agree with Commissioner Stein that the time frame to do it in December is not realistic. It doesn't make sense. But then maybe it's the other side of the coin coming up later. That would work out well for me too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Other public testimony? Other public testimony? Seeing none, I believe we're ready to move on the resolution. I'll ask for a motion to approve, and then I know there are some ideas for edits. So is there a motion to approve the resolution regarding the requirements for environmental governance and coordination as mandated by the Executive Order 1132.
So moved.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Stein.
My first minor edit is in the first point after the, with the recommendations, after the now therefore be it resolved at the top of page 3 of the recommendation. Number one, it says the EQB should continue to exist. I move that we strike the word but and insert the word and.
Okay. Strike but. Okay. I think you should be able to have,
a minor
unanimous consent on
consent
that.
On that one.
Ordered.
Mr. Chair, similarly, I wanted to insert at the very end of the resolution, similar to what Commissioner Landwehr offered for the previous resolution, that we insert a now therefore be it further resolved, upon concurrence of the governor, that EQB and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency develop implementation plans for these recommendations, including timelines and recommended resources.
You've heard the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Further discussion on the motion, John?
Just, I think that Commissioner Landwehr made a good point that we bring the recommendations to the governor, and then the governor, if he concurs, or however his direction is, that we follow through with an implementation plan. I think that's a good idea we should have in each of these resolutions. So that was my intent.
All right. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to edit by adding a additional now further, now therefore be it further resolved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Further edits? Comments?
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Rothman.
I hate to admit it, but I'm a recovering attorney.
There's a program for that.
I just caught some very minor grammatical, stylistic things, and so I would just submit these to Bob, if everybody's okay with that.
Maybe a motion to make some stylistic and grammatical corrections as needed would be in order.
I'll make that motion, Mr.
That's
Chair.
That's a motion. There is a second.
Yes.
There is a second. Discussion on the motion.
Do we require that he receive treatment for that?
that he receive treatment. That's right.
Take me out to the woods. Go fishing.
Works for me.
All right.
He could have been at the Environmental Committee this morning and suffered through Commissioner Fredrickson, Landwehr, and Stein's presentation to the Minnesota Bar Association.
Been there. Well, I wasn't, I'd be happy to go.
Your CLEs are up to date, apparently.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, good, so good, far. Good. All right. You've heard the motion and the second. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion carries. On the motion to further this to the governor, the motion to recommend for the environmental governance and coordination, our recommendation rather, further discussion on the motion as amended? None. All those in favor say aye.
Roll call.
I'm sorry. Roll call vote.
Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Kronk.
Aye.
Ms. Duncanson.
Aye.
Commissioner Fredrickson.
Aye.
Ms. Gehring.
Aye.
Commissioner Landwehr.
Aye.
Commissioner Knapstad.
Aye.
Commissioner Rothman.
Aye.
Mr. Saxog.
Aye.
Commissioner Arsenault.
Aye.
Commissioner Stein.
Aye.
Mr. Tomlinson.
Aye.
Thank you. Passed unanimously.
Unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you. Let's take a 15-minute break. 15-minute break, not a 50-minute break. And we can get back just a little bit before 3 would be great.
This is no longer a trifold bulldog.
And no. Recess.
I get that. You might not have been here.
Oh, thank you.
Good work.
So
the
bad.
First time, but they were done.
Oh, no.
Armal flow. Oh, okay. So, yeah, so you can get a good measurement.
Let's try and reconvene if we could, please. We'll get a little bit of a jump start on our agenda here, about a 10-minute jump start. Yeah. Bill, why don't you wander up? We'll move then to the executive order again, 1132, and the adoption of the Minnesota Environment and Energy Report Card. And Bill Grant is here to present. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Bill Grant from the Department of Commerce. And you should have in front of you the all but final draft of the Minnesota Environment and Energy Report Card. Mr. Patton earlier thanked some people, and I've got a few to kind of add to the list of people. I'd like to just start out by thanking from the various agencies, Andy Holdsworth from DNR, Paul Hoff from the Pollution Control Agency, John Gostovich from the Department of Transportation was a big help in the early stages of the design of the document. Neil Young and Chris Sprung from Employment and Economic Development were a huge help in design and production of the document. Ellen Anderson and Anna Sherman from Agriculture were a huge help in putting together the two advisory group meetings that we had in August, where we reviewed the document with a wide range of stakeholders. And then Bob also mentioned Matt Langen, who deserted me at a very critical moment in the development of the report card, but we managed to persevere.
That's a thank you then.
That is a thank you, a backhanded one, I will admit. But, a thank you nonetheless. there are a couple of things that keep this from being an absolutely final product. First, we intend to add a glossary. There are a number of terms in here which we think for average readers would be helpful to have a glossary to refer to. There may also be in the graphs and charts some minor fine-tuning, not to the substance of those graphs and charts, but just to the calibration of the left and or the X and Y axes and other minor repairs like that. So we're expecting, with your hoped for approval today, to be able to turn around the final production of this and printing of the document for your upcoming citizen forums. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd turn it back to you for any thoughts and reactions from the board.
Thank you, Bill. We do have in front of us then the resolution of the Environmental Quality Board, Minnesota Environment and Energy Report Card as mandated. Do you want to, is there any need for you to take a walk through that, Bill, for us?
I can do that quickly, Mr. Chairman. The first whereas, of course, is the paragraph from the executive order that required the report card. As I noted, we put together a strong multidisciplinary and interagency team, and again, many thanks to all of the commissioners here for making those staff available to us for putting this together. We then developed a report card using key indicators, and I should note in saying that as I mentioned in earlier reports to you, this is, we hope, indicative, but not a thorough review of all of the indicators that could possibly have been used. And we certainly expect, as we go forward in future years and future iterations of the report card, that not only will we be continuing to report on the metrics here, but we may very well find that we have other metrics that we want to add to the document to give a more complete reflection of the state of Minnesota's environment. The report card, as I mentioned before, was reviewed by two ad hoc advisory groups of invited participants, and this really covered a very wide range of stakeholders to environmental issues here in Minnesota. We then, of course, hope to use this document in discussions with the public in meetings that are upcoming just after the Thanksgiving break and before Christmas. And so with that, I think that's, from my perspective.
Bill, do you look at this as sort of a baseline draft? So this is where we are today.
It is, Mr. Chairman, with the caveat that I just mentioned, that we may very well find through, and I think this is really the purpose of the discussions with the citizens now in the weeks and months ahead, is that there are going to be, and we may even hear some of this in testimony today, that there are metrics that people feel were missed or that don't correctly characterize the state of the environment, and I think we need to be open to those suggestions and reconsider, as not for the purpose of redoing this, I hope, but for the purpose of when we put this together again a year from now, of adding, subtracting, and so forth as we deem fit.
Of course. Thank you. Further. Are there questions for Bill? Aggie?
Mr. Chair, on page 2, under community water supplies, our clean and safe, I've just got two slight changes to make. You cite the source for the nitrate as being the Pollution Control Agency, but I think it's actually the Minnesota.
Aggie, Department. Can you hold that just a little bit? I sort of got ahead of myself, and it's my fault. I wanted to ask if there are public comments at this time, and then what we'll do is move the report, and then your amendment or edits will tack in there. Ms. McAbee? Don't go too far away.
No, you can stay here. You can stay here. I don't mind.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chair. I'm Paula McAbee, and I do work with Just Change Law Offices for a variety of clients and have been doing a lot of work recently with Water Legacy, which is an organization formed to protect Minnesota water quality and the communities, both human and ecological, that rely on it. And I just looked at this document today. It's I was not involved with its drafting. And I feel that some of the areas like the energy and the climate change have really nailed the metrics. I think in the land use and the water quality area, there are some really important gaps. And so I want to talk a little bit about metrics that at some point I'm going to put this in writing, metrics that should be there for water quality. First, I think for groundwater, I just discovered to my horror last week how little I knew about water control of pollution in groundwater in Minnesota. When I was having a discussion with one of the head staff at the EPA, and I asked about a specific project, and it was leaking pollutants into the groundwater. And he said, what do you expect to do about it? In Minnesota, you don't have any control documents that determine whether a project can put pollutants into groundwater. And I spent about 6 hours reading statutes and rules, and except for solid and hazardous waste, he's right. So one of the things on groundwater is, does Minnesota have any way of controlling what projects put into groundwater? And one of the important issues, we've been working with Bruce Johnson, who's retired from the EPA, the MnDOT, and the PCA, and he said a lot of this mining exploring is putting brines, salt water, into aquifers and contaminating it. We always thought that was a very minor problem. And somehow we talked the Forest Service into doing some tests. And in three-fourths of the wells that they dug, they found brines, high levels of salt water that, unless you plug up that well, goes in and contaminates the aquifer. So we're sort of doing a hear no evil, see no evil on whether what we're doing in Minnesota is contaminating groundwater. So I guess the metrics would be, do we know what's happening with our groundwater, and do we have some mechanism to prevent contamination? Because it's not just aesthetics, it's things that are harmful to human health, like manganese, which can actually reduce the IQ of kids. So that would be an important metric that we don't have. And then, you know, we have some discussion here, a really excellent discussion about mercury in the air section, about how we're ratcheting down on air pollution of mercury. But what we're finding, and the health department reported last January, is that in Minnesota, 1 out of 10 babies is born. Our babies are born in the Lake Superior region with levels of mercury that exceed safe levels. And there's a researcher coming out of Michigan who has done work with sediments for the past decade, and what he's found is that how much mercury one has in fish is a result not of just the air deposition, which is elemental mercury, but if you've got sulfate pollution, it turns into hydrogen sulfide and it makes the mercury bioavailable. Well, so we should be looking at mercury as a metric in terms of impairment of fish and control of sulfates, not just the air side. Also in terms of impairments, there's a nice chart about impaired waters. And in 2012, the PCA did something which was really, really important, which was the first time in the Arrowhead region they tracked impairments of aquatic life. I mean, scientists have been telling us for years that the amount of copper, nickel, sulfates, salts, conductivity is impairing aquatic life in our streams and our rivers and our lakes up north. And the PCA started actually documenting that and listing those out in impaired waters in 2012. But even though the tribes and wild ricers of all backgrounds are saying that the monosulfates, uncontrolled pollution from the mines, is killing off wild rice, there's not one water in Minnesota that has even been assessed as impaired for either compliance with the sulfate standard or for degradation of wild rice. So we should be including as metrics mercury in fish as well as mercury in air. Our water is impaired for aquatic life due to discharge of wastewater. And are our waters impaired for wild rice, which is fundamental to our tribes as well as a good indicator of the general ecological health? Another thing that you would never have gotten me to say this a year ago, I wouldn't have known this. I've been a big booster of regulators for 30 years, and I discovered to my chagrin when a couple scientists and tribal staff told me to go look at mining permits that so far, and I've reviewed about 7 now in detail, and I haven't found one that complies with water quality standards, not one. That's 0 for 7. I mean, you wouldn't even get in the minor leagues with that record. And so I think we should put as our metrics, are our projects, our big projects, do they comply with water quality standards? Because what I'm finding in the very narrow area where I'm actually doing in-depth research, and mining may be unlike anything else in Minnesota, but I'm finding We don't comply. Sometimes there's no limits in the permits. Sometimes they get standards of compliance. Sometimes they just monitor. Sometimes they get variances. But basically, they don't comply. And even if we believe, as I do, that you can do taconite mining in Minnesota safely, it's going to cost money to do it right. And so far, we've had no appetite to make the corporations pay to do it right. So we have another metric, which is, are our big facilities complying with water quality standards? Then on the land use side, I guess there's a big paragraph about mining and its importance, but there are no metrics. And I think the metrics we should be looking at is, if we need metals, what is the most energy efficient way to get them? Because there's a big, you know, over the past 10 years, now 50% of United States copper comes from recycling, because recycling saves 85 to 90% of the energy required to dig holes in the ground and smelt. And the question is also jobs. Well, no one has analyzed at a state level, and here's the EQB, which is a perfect position to do that. Couldn't we get more jobs per dollar by recycling to find the copper or nickel, what we need for our cell phones, rather than dig a hole in the ground? And I think we should be looking at, if we're looking at mining, is, are we complying with water quality standards? Are we doing things in the most energy efficient way possible? And is recycling an option that we should be, you know, both recycling copper that, you know, maybe in our basements and our landfills, as well as electronic waste? Are we doing what we can to save the most jobs and do the least environmental harm if we need these metals? I also didn't see anything in the land use about sustainable farming. Nothing about value-added organics, nothing about local farming, nothing about prevention of monocultures, nothing about non-point source pollution. And I think if we're looking at agriculture, we should be looking at some of these as metrics for, are we doing a good job? And not just, are we doing a good job for environment, but are we creating value-added product that we can sell locally rather than having to import everything? So those would be my thoughts on some of the areas where I think the report card needs to have some additional metrics in order to capture what's really beneficial for the environment. And I'd be happy to answer questions.
No, thank you, Ms. McAbee. Again, I think this is a working document as much as it is anything, and given the fact that we will be going out through the month of November and the month of December holding opportunities for public to come in, I suspect that the metrics that you're talking about should evolve as much from that public comment rather than this being the, you know, the end-all, be-all.
Right.
So I appreciate your comments regarding additional metrics, and we're hopeful that will grow out of this discussion that we're going to be having over the next 60 days.
And if possible, maybe you could invite some sort of wonkish people who have been spending their lives dealing with metrics, because I just know that, I mean, many of the citizens who I talk
to. Self-described wonk?
I'm afraid so. Guilty as charged. Because many citizens might come and they might say, I don't want this pollution dumping into the river, but they wouldn't necessarily know how to frame it in terms of a metric. So I'm going to try and help a little bit with the outreach, but I think we need to try and make sure we've got wonks as well as regular human beings.
Yeah. And we're going to have a discussion about that later, and Ellen is going to bring us up to speed in terms of those, and Anna, those upcoming meetings and opportunity. You say, no, maybe not? All right. Thanks for your comments. Please, come on up. If you could, maybe at the end of the discussion, just fill out one of those purple or yellow or pink cards. What color are they?
They're purple.
Okay. Welcome to the board. Please identify yourself.
Thank you. My name is Michelle Rozier. I'm with the Sierra Club. And first, I want to thank you for putting together this report. I think this is something that our members and supporters will find very useful. I do agree with some of the comments that Paula made, and wanted to just confirm this process is somewhat new to us. We're sort of coming up to speed literally this week on what the Environmental Congress is, what this report card is, and how it will be used. So what I heard you just say is that these meetings in November and December will be a chance for the public to give comment on this draft, and that then you will take that comment and issue a final report. Is that
what I said is basically the substance of the last whereas in the resolution, and it says whereas Minnesota Environment and Energy Report Card will be used in future public discussions, including the Citizens Forum to be held in November and December in Rochester, Bloomington, Duluth, Worthington, St. Cloud, and Moorhead, and the Environmental Congress to be held in March of 2013. So I'm assuming that these documents will be available as we're visiting with citizen members across Minnesota, and that we can continue to build on the matrix that we have presently build you.
And just to clarify that response a little bit, at least as I understand it, Mr. Chair, we're not intending at this point for this version of the report card to move additional drafts beyond this one. This will be an annual process, so the kinds of input that we're receiving through this process will inform the next annual report card. If I'm see.
Okay, so the
excuse me.
So then my first recommendation would be that you do consider an update after you get citizen feedback, because I do think some of the ideas that Paula raised and many of the ideas that you're going to hear are extremely valuable in terms of putting together a report card like this, and will make this a more useful tool for citizens. Specifically, one thing I know you will hear during the upcoming meetings is about building out the environmental health and environmental justice elements around this report card. Specifically, for a lot of our supporters, they define the environment as including personal health, access and quality of food, and transit and land use development, which I didn't see a lot of in this report. And I apologize, I've read it in the last hour, so maybe I missed something. And then looking at the other areas, I agree the mercury burden in the section on water is extremely important. I've worked on these issues since 2001, and fish consumption and water and mercury has been something that is continually talked about by our supporters, and I don't think the section in air covers that. I think aquatic life, we have a lot of sportsmen. They're going to want to know what's going on with aquatic life, also in water. Under land, land use development, there's a lot around complete streets that are happening, and this idea of access to bike, walk, and transit opportunities. So some information about that for people to understand what their access is and how that's changing over time would be good. Also on land, the wild rice and agriculture pieces, so that's kind of the food aspect that we hear a lot about. And I didn't know if this fit under land, but something about landfills, recycling, and garbage burning is something we also get a lot of questions about. Then on air, there I would consider adding a section on environmental health, looking at statewide as well as locations. There's this idea of disproportionate burden from air pollution, and starting to test that out and show people if that's the case, so that then we as a state can address it. So looking at respiratory illnesses, cancer risks, that kind of thing. On energy, looking at pollution by energy source, we do a lot of outreach to the public at the state fair and all kinds of different things, and we get a lot of questions about pollution and how it relates to their energy and electricity. So helping, I know Xcel does a good job of that in their little flyer, but helping people to understand pollution by energy source would be valuable. And then finally on climate, looking at what we call resilient habitats. This is the idea of our ecosystems being carbon sinks, and there is mention of that in the section on climate. But I know in past meetings with DNR staff and others, they have a really comprehensive idea of ecosystem management that I think could be better developed in that climate section and is really valuable. There is mention of how our wetlands and forests play a role in addressing climate, but helping people to understand that more and what we're doing to those ecosystems and how we can protect them to address climate would be valuable. So I apologize, it's all on the fly today, and we'll have comments and we'll be turning people out to the Environmental Congress listening sessions, but those are some initial thoughts on how this could be a really great resource for Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't mean to imply that we're going to, you know, this is the report card. This is what we have in front of us, and of course it is a baseline, and we can continue to move forward with that, and so I meant to imply that we'll gather more information just as we did today from you. I'm sure we'll gather those same that information as we travel around the state this next 60 days. So, thank you. Are there any questions or comments? Not. Thank you very much. Jim? Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Jim Urkel. I'm with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and I've spoken to you a number of different times on the various tasks under Executive Order 1132. And a lot of what I've been talking about is really how the executive order is really sort of back to the future, that the governor tasked you with these jobs, including the report card, and all of them are basically things that the state has supposed to have been doing for some time. And the report card is a good example of that. There was a time when we had Minnesota milestones, and there were 70 different indicators, 16 of which were environmental. In light of the fact that you're going to be going out to the citizen forums and hearing from the public, I just wanted to read something from 2002. It's from what was Minnesota Planning. It says, Minnesota Milestones is the result of a citizen-based planning process. More than 10,000 Minnesotans participated in a process by attending one of 45 meetings around the state, filling in surveys, reviewing draft documents. More than 9,000 copies were distributed around the state, and writing letters. They came up with a set of indicators. They look a lot like what Mr. Grant worked up with all of the help from his core team and the advisory group meetings that he worked on. We were part of that. He allowed us to play in the indicator sandbox, and that was a lot of fun. This really is sort of a reboot of Minnesota Milestones in that sense. And in sort of crossing over the comments that you've heard from others, as well as the point that Mr. Grant made, which is this is going to be adapted, it's going to be moving forward, I would suggest that you go back and look at Minnesota Milestones, because it just as you're going to be, or you're thinking about going web-based with a database on environmental review, Minnesota Milestones was web-based. And not only that, but it could be customized for specific regions. And a lot of the data sets that are used for the indicators that are in the report today are ones that can be adapted and pulled down by region, by watershed, by county. And so if somebody's really interested in those things, they can come in and pull that stuff down. That will allow for that adaptation over time. So even though I'm an old dog and I like paper copies of stuff, it is possible that you could do this in an electronic way that really broadens it out. The other thing that I would point out is that the Wilder Foundation is hosting an indicators project as well. It's called Minnesota Compass. And they're doing a number of these things as well. There are fewer categories, but what they do is they have sort of a general indicator, and then they look at leading indicators, things that tell you. So it's as an example, if you look on the land page, you know, you start off with land cover. That's interesting. but it doesn't tell you where the land is, how land cover is changing. I know from playing with the data from the National Resource Inventory that you can pull that up in any number of different ways, and you can see where, for example, cropland or pasture land is going. Is it being converted into, is it going into forest land? Is it going into urbanized land? You can do that by, you know, you can do it statewide, you can do it by region, you can call it out by county. Now it has margins of errors as you get narrower, but it still allows you to look at what's actually changing in your neck of the woods. I think that kind of information would be really important. And particularly and with Minnesota Compass, you can see that once they start with the sort of general indicator and then the leading indicators, then they say, and there are all these other ones that you can look at. That's where you can bring in these others to the extent that there is measurement going on. You can pull it in underneath. You can have it there for use by the public. If it gets lots of hits, maybe it shows up as a, you know, a leader in the next hard copy report. So those are the kinds of things that I would suggest. And I agree that this is a good report as it stands. The fact that it will be adapted over time to the extent that you can make it web-based would make it even more helpful for the residents of the state of Minnesota.
It would be interesting to see an overlay on land, current Minnesota land cover that takes you back in 10-year cycles, let's say, to see where we've been and where we've come. I've seen that in with wetland maps that have gone back to the 1940s, and it's pretty stunning.
So Mr. Grant didn't take all of MCEA's comments on this, and I'm not bitter. but this is a way of getting to them all, you know, by feathering them underneath and in different layers.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Questions for Jim or comments? Thank you very much. The mic is still open for public comment. Seeing none, let's move then back to the resolution.
I'll move it for discussion.
Motion to move the resolution. Second. Is there a second? There is a second. Further discussion on the motion or edits or amendments? Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chair, I do have a number of sort of non-substantive edits, and I wonder, rather than try to go through those here, can we just recommend edits to Bob or Bill?
Are they stylistic or
well, I would be the wrong person to talk about style, Mr. Chairman, but they might be, to the Commissioner Rothman's point, they might be typographical and so on.
I think we have the freedom to go ahead and make those stylistic and typographic, but if they're non-substantive, then that means there's no sense in putting them in, right? Go ahead, however you want to.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess what I'd just do is friendly amendment with non-substantive edits as provided by the board.
Sure. Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, no problem with that suggestion. I do have a timing issue with it, though. And
they're right here, Bill.
Okay. All right. Yeah. For all the rest of you, though, I really think I'd have to have them by the end of this week if we're to meet the production schedule that we're on for the citizen forums. So.
Are they long? I think generally. Maybe it'd be a better idea to just lay them out there.
Okay. Well, the longest thing would be simply that if I'm looking at this as a private individual, I see a graphic. I have no idea where the data is that supports this, and it raises questions. And that might be a more challenging thing, Bill. I don't know if that meets your timeline or not, but a bibliography of data sources would be very helpful, I think. We reference, and I'm looking in particular on page 5, the fish population level. That, this is my agency. I have no idea where those graphics come from. So just sourcing where that came from. So if I am interested in where that came from, I could go back to the original data. Would be very useful. So a bibliography of that. On page 7, starting on page 6, the headline, Land for Farming, Wildlife, and Recreation, great, but it excludes living, it excludes forestry, it excludes some other sort of major land uses. So what I might suggest is land for business, recreation, and life, or something similar. I don't want to be exclusionary here because people are going to look at this and go, where am I in there? So a tweaking there. On page 8, the managing our wetlands and native prairies, the graphic there says abundance of wetlands in Minnesota. What it really is, I think, is the percent of pre-settlement wetlands still intact. And what this doesn't reflect, it talks about prairies, wetlands and prairies. What it doesn't reflect is what has been added in permanent protection. So, for instance, the Wetlands Reserve Program has added more than 100,000 acres. The CREP RIM programs have added a couple hundred thousand acres. I don't know. It seems to me that those ought to be reflected, even though I understand they're not the original wetlands and not the original grasslands. They still are. But I'm throwing that out as free consideration, again, with due respect for your deadline. Managing our forests, the bottom paragraph, the third from the bottom sentence today, half of Minnesota non-reserve forest lands are certified. Most places you actually give the percent as a numerical figure, and this suggests that 50%, not 51%, not 49% is the correct number, and I just suggest putting the percentage in there. Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, this is you wanted me to do this.
So I did.
Continuing to go through.
And seriously, I think it's a good idea to, you know, we're in a public process. I think it's a good idea to, you know, talk these through.
As you can see, they're non-substantive. They're just stylistic. On page 9, Bill, the right column, the third paragraph of all Minnesota species, I think what that is intended to say is of all these indicator species, because certainly we have Minnesota species that have declined more than the moose.
Mm-hmm.
And the second to the last line, it says most likely due to climate change. I think the suspicion is that it's due to climate change. I would say possibly due to climate change related heat and stress. Then on page 10, Bill, we talk about managing minerals and mines. We do have very readily available information on the tons of iron ore produced per year in Minnesota. And if you're looking for some sort of a statistic that we can measure over time, that would be one that would be pretty readily accessible. And Mr. Chair, I believe that is everything I've got.
Maybe a motion to include your edits would be in order, Tom.
Unless there are more other people have. Mr. Chair, do you want to take them individually?
I think we can take your slate, and if Bill is comfortable in incorporating those in without too much of a burden for deadlines.
Well, yeah, and Mr. Chair, I'm going to want to follow up with Commissioner Landwehr on these. Some of what you've suggested would be quite easy to fix. Others are going to be quite a bit more challenging in this time frame.
Pretty challenging, and so I
think it would be. We may have that in kind of bits and pieces, but I don't know that it's been assembled. But I can follow up with you. I guess, Mr. Chair, what I'm concerned about is a motion that would end up dictating that all of these changes be completed by the time we take this from draft to final, and I'm not sure I can keep that promise.
Okay, so we have kind of a conundrum here, trying to figure out a way out of this conundrum.
Sheriff? Commissioner Landwehr said to the extent they can be accomplished within the time frame.
By Friday. Yeah.
So I think that's your
conundrum
out.
Solved?
That's your out. If it's of a larger scale and cannot be accommodated, he acknowledged that.
Right. And Mr. Chairman, I guess the other thing I would offer is that I think something like a bibliography, I think that's important. I understand we may not be able to incorporate it in this document, but if people could be working on it before or even during the public comment sessions, if we could put that online, maybe even just make a asterisk in here that this document and subsequent errata will be available online at blah, blah, blah. Then we could amend as needed and provide updates as needed without actually trying to incorporate it in a written document.
Well, at this point in time, then, the motion would be that you move those edits And what was your comment, Commissioner Stein?
To the extent possible within the production schedule.
So you've heard the motion. Is there further discussion on? Do we have a second? No.
Second.
Further discussion on the motion. So we're the motion is to include edits in this document. At this point in time, we're still we have this, I believe, in front of us. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion carries. Now,
Mr. Chair,
do we have a motion on this one yet?
We don't have a motion.
No, okay. We need a motion
Mr.
move
Chair.
Ahead. Aggie, you had a comment.
I have very modest recommendations
on the
compared
document?
To Commissioner Lander on the document.
On the document.
Page 2.
Very modest, non-substantive.
Very modest, but substantive. Well, one isn't. I believe the source for the information on the community water systems is actually the Minnesota Department of Health. And then on the third paragraph of that community water supplies, it leaves the impression that the only thing we test for is nitrate. So I would recommend we say community water supplies are tested for about 100 compounds. Nitrate, a contaminant that makes its way, blah, blah, blah.
Can you point me, Aggie, to where exactly where
okay,
you
third,
are?
Page 2, under the community water supplies,
yep.
Third paragraph. Mm-hmm. Community water systems statewide are monitored, for about 100 compounds, period. Then nitrate, a new sentence, contaminant that makes its way.
You wanted to add in about 100 compounds. Okay.
So otherwise, it looks like all we test for is nitrate, and that would be an
Is that a motion?
I can't make a motion, Mr. Chair.
Oh, that's right,
believe.
You can't.
I'll move that for...
Motion has been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. There is a second. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair, just to, if you put a period there and you start nitrate, it's not a sentence.
We'd
have to just ask staff to make a sentence out of that phrase.
Oh, thank you.
Or if you have a suggestion.
Yeah. That's yep. good. I think you.
Thank you.
Just to make
it. Is a contaminant that makes its way into.
Bill, do you understand?
Yep.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Well, same sign, the motion carries. Other comments or edits on the draft document?
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner
I wonder if, I know we have EQB on the front and back, but I wonder if we might want to say somewhere in the document all of the agencies and individuals that are involved in this effort and cite an email address or somewhere that residents, a website residents can go for more information.
Okay. Move.
I move to include.
Motion to cite the agencies involved and the members in the draft documents. I assume you mean not just this one, but the other. Or just this one?
I was talking about this one.
Okay.
The report card.
All right. You've heard the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Is there further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. On the resolution, Minnesota Environment and Energy Report Card is mandated by Executive Order 1132. We have not had a motion to approve. There is a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Now, further discussion on the motion to approve and forward to the governor the Minnesota Environment and Energy Report Card resolution. With one, did you have one change? Okay.
You're correct, Chair. I have one.
With stylistic or grammatical changes?
Yes, sir.
Yours.
I would like to just add that we submit a grammatical, stylistic, minor, very minor. Very minor.
Non-substantive.
Change. Yes.
Okay. I think we can incorporate that into the motion. Further discussion on the motion to approve with stylistic and grammatical errors corrected. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? I'm sorry. Roll call.
Sorry.
Roll call.
Commissioner Clark.
Formalities. Aye.
Commissioner Cronk?
Aye.
Ms. Duncanson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fredrickson?
Aye.
Ms. Gehring?
Aye.
Commissioner Landwehr?
Aye.
Commissioner Navstad?
Aye.
Commissioner Rothman?
Aye.
Mr. Saxog?
Aye.
Commissioner Arsenault?
Aye.
Commissioner Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Tomlinson?
Aye.
The motion is approved unanimously. At this time, we will move to...
Just one last comment. This is a really nice document, Bill.
The photographs are very nice.
Lest that gets lost in the discussion here. Very, very nice. Very much appreciated.
And the graphics are very good.
Yeah. Anna, did you hear that?
And
you got a shout out and you didn't even realize it. You know,
nice work.
The graphics,
very
nice
good work.
All
excellent.
The way around. Well, you had something to do with it.
That is a credit to Deeds.
Deeds
credit. Okay. I'm sorry. That's once, right?
Thank you, Anna.
Okay. Let us then go to our last item on the agenda, and that would be I'll ask Ellen and to come forward and give us a little sense of the Environmental Congress update. Welcome, Ellen Anderson.
Thank you, and Todd Bewin and I will do this together.
Welcome, Todd.
good afternoon. So, we're getting really close to the kickoff here, so it's exciting. Less than 2 weeks till the first forum, and so we've gotten lots of RSVPs on our website already. People are, the word is getting out there, and what we're working on right now is a lot of outreach and a lot of we're getting a media presence out there, and you'll see more of that in the next couple of weeks. So thank you to everyone who has sent out a letter through your agency or through your own network to for citizen members to stakeholders, because we've sent that letter out from all assigned by commissioners and the board to I don't know how many people, but lots and lots of Minnesotans. So I don't actually have access to all those lists, so I don't know how many people it is, but it's a lot. And we've done some other, we've sent the same letter out that went to all of the agency lists, stakeholder lists. We sent it out to some other groups that we identified in the communities where the forums are. So we sent invitation letters out to local governments, tribal governments, university campuses, chambers of commerce, local environmental organizations, et cetera. We tried to identify them, and we're doing the best we can to find everybody who might want to know about the forum. So it seems that a lot of people are hearing about it, but of course we probably will miss some. So just keep spreading the word. Let's see. We will make sure we get the wonks, and we will make a special effort to reach out to wonks. We did have a couple of advisory groups for the report card, as we've talked about before, which did have some scientists on it, and that was really great to have their input. But, of course, they were, you know, a relatively small group of people, so they didn't represent everybody. And so we want academic people and experts to show up, as well as ordinary citizens, and all participate. Our media team, which all of our teams keep changing. We just lost one of our good communications people, or we will be soon, to another job, but that's what happens in the exciting world of state government sometimes. We're going to start promoting commissioners out in the media and EQB members, your presence at these forums. So it's time to give us final confirmation of which forums you're going to attend. And it might be in all the local papers, so you might want to make sure that you're listed correctly on our schedule as to whether you're going to be there or not.
A thinly veiled threat.
So I think Anna, the famous Anna, you'll be sending out a reminder, final confirmation this week, I think. That's the plan, to get that final schedule. And we're also working hard on finalizing our schedule of all the staff that will be present at these forums. Because we're doing small group breakout sessions, that takes a lot of staff, as well as staff to set up and organize and do all the other things that are involved in these events. And we are planning an orientation, a webinar that will be a way for anyone who's going to staff the forums to get very very familiar with the agenda and the responsibilities that are expected of them. We'll also send out information to all of you in advance of the forum so you know exactly what to expect, what the schedule is of the forums, and what we expect you to do in your roles. And that's going to involve lots of interaction with lots of citizens, primarily. That's what we really want all of you to play a role in. Let's see, anything else? What am I missing? Is there anything else for updates? We could talk about the, you know, just as a reminder, maybe just briefly, I'll say it again. We, in terms of the plan for the forums, we have there a fairly long time frame scheduled because the first half hour and the last half hour are intended to be an open house kind of format where we'll have different metrics from the report card posted on the walls at different stations, and it'll allow people to circulate and talk with all of you and submit their comments and take a look at some of the in-depth information. We'll have copies of the report cards, which will be going to print soon. Thank you, Deed. Deed is doing the printing for us. Of course, we'll send a bill to all of you, but
Ellen,
appreciate the work. So we'll have color copies for everyone. And then we'll be sitting down and doing a short presentation where we'll have commissioners lead the presentation and do some highlights of the report card. And then we're going to do a lot of Q&A. So it's a fairly structured format where we're going to ask questions of citizens so that we can try to sort of make sure we're focusing on getting the information that would be most valuable. And we've sort of... Todd, you framed that in a really nice way of the sort of the three things we're trying to get at, which is...
Well, concerns, yeah, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair members. The focus of that small group time is really to try to get... That's where we're really listening, and we want to maximize the time that we have for input from the folks that attend. We want to hear about their concerns with the current state of their quality of their life in the environment and energy and issues. And the concerns, the ideas, or the vision that they have for what they would like to see differently going forward, say for the next generation. And then what ideas do they have to try to get there? What are the things that they see that could be implemented to try to achieve that vision? So,
and that
sort
will
of
take
a,
place in the small group,
yes,
with the 8 or 10 tables that we might have
correct
set up?
Okay.
Same question to all of them.
Yeah, and around all those issues of air, land, water, yeah, energy,
yep,
and climate. So.
And you'll be all sitting at those tables with people as part of that discussion. And we're also going to have some preliminary questions, sort of multiple choice questions with those little clickers, because everybody likes clickers, I think. I hope. Some people do anyway. And so I really also want to emphasize, for because it is a structured format, there's lots of opportunities for input in a lot of different ways. And we'll have an online forum that's going to go up right before the forum starts so that people who aren't there and can't participate in person can submit their comments. Or if people have detailed, substantive comments that they want to make, they can submit them online or they can submit them at the forum. We'll have comment cards and different ways to do that to make sure that whatever way you want to make your voice heard, you have a way to do that. So. It's all important, and we want to be open to all those kinds of
even non-substantive comments,
modest,
even grammatical suggestions,
stylistic,
you know,
yeah, good,
irrelevant comments. We'll take them all. and we've talked about this before as well, but we have a big job ahead of us because we want to do a really excellent job of compiling all this information, all the information we take online and through this process, and put it into some kind of usable format that we can bring to the statewide Congress and report again, you know, what we've learned, and then further analyze that at the state Congress.
Any other comments?
I was just in a meeting today at the PCA on this issue. We were talking with our regional managers about their involvement and our involvement from our regional offices, and there was just some reaction that, you know, we're not on the range with our meetings, we're in Duluth, and that there's already some feedback on that for our Duluth office that they're not necessarily happy about that on the range. So, and those kinds of things, just that when we're in Moorhead, we're 175 miles from the northern border of Minnesota, and that, you know, just we, you know, they acknowledge that we have so many, we have only so many dates and only so many opportunities to get out there, and our commissioners can't be traveling to 12 of these meetings probably. So they understand that, but there's also folks that feel like we haven't, we're not going to be in their neck of the woods. So just for all of you to be aware of that, and that we may hear
the
that
same
out there.
Concern from folks across the state also, and so I recognize that and acknowledge it, and if there's a possibility that we could, you know, squeeze a couple more in, I'd be more than happy to do so.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I've been hearing the same thing too. There's, and I think we should take that as a really good sign that people really want to talk to all of you, and they really want to talk about these issues, and so there's a lot of pent-up demand, and so whether, you know, we're doing the best we can with the limited resources that we have and the time that everybody has available to us, but there's lots of ways we can have more meetings in the future. We can go to other communities, we can do follow-up work, and so we'll just have to keep working on trying to find ways to reach out to people where they feel like they want this to come to their town.
No, I appreciate you bringing that up. It's even though it's a negative, but we need to know that. I've certainly heard about it also. So, questions, comments?
Tom? Mr. Chairman, we did send out to one of our lists, and I got a response back from a legislator. It made me realize, do we have electeds, state, both current and future state electeds on a mailing list, AMC, LMC? It'd be great to get decision makers informed of this as well.
Yeah, and I know in the communities that we're going, we've invited electeds that we were aware of, but we need to do a follow-up since the election, and we haven't done that yet, but we better do it soon to make sure we catch all the newly elected people.
We should be able to do that with email without too much trouble, don't you think?
So yeah.
At least with the existing bodies. All right. Other questions or comments? We're approaching 4 o'clock.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Ellen, did we get a copy of that letter that the commissioner signed? Like, did you send it to the board? I mean, we had so much mail, I don't remember.
So.
If we didn't, I just would want a copy to know what it said.
I apologize.
No, that's okay. We've got so much, and there's so many things going on, but that way we can sell it. I mean, I talked to a lot of people, too, and they just want to know if there's going to be a DNR commissioner dunk tank at the meeting, or, you know, if they should show up for what purpose. So.
No, thank you for asking.
Well, thanks, Julie. We'll make sure that.
Make sure you get that right
away.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anything else? Any other business that needs to come before the board?
Can I just say, you know, this is great work. It's focused. It's coming together really well, and, you know, it'll be a really important, but also it sounds like fun and interesting to get out. So great work.
Well, if I can just say thank you to all these lots and lots of staff that have been working on all four of these projects, but we're not quite ready for the champagne yet either, because we got a lot more work to do. We're not done, but congratulations on moving things forward.
I want to take a couple of seconds here to acknowledge Bernie and congratulations on your new position, and
we'll
welcome to the EQB Board of Directors. We have a lot of fun here.
Thank you.
With that, I think we're ready for a motion to adjourn. There's a motion. Is there a second? There is. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carried. We're out of here 15 minutes early. Thank you.
Good job. Thank you.
Yes, I'm coming. Excellent.